Hello and welcome to this specially created podcast celebrating Army Reserves Day. My name's Gemma Forte, and over the course of the next half hour or so, I'm going to be joined by three fascinating guests: TV presenter and reservist Jules Hudson, Ice Maiden Sophie Montagna, and explorer extraordinaire Leveson Wood. So joining me now is Lance Sergeant Sophie Montagna. Hello, Sophie.
Hi.
An incredible lady who had a normal job and then became an Army reservist. And the next thing she knows, she signed up as part of a team, the first female team, Ice Maiden, to cross Antarctica using only muscle. And this took 61 days. Is that all correct?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Because other expeditions might use kites, for example, or in historically they use dogs. They've now been banned in Antarctica, but obviously with a kite you can travel a lot faster than we did, so it was more of a slog.
Unbelievable. So let's go right back. So first of all, because I know you are an Army reservist, aren't you?
Yeah.
So you had what people would call a normal job working in marketing. And so then you decided to join the reserves. But tell me a little bit more about the expedition.
I sort of got to that stage in my job where I was fidgety and I didn't really want to be sitting at a desk anymore. And I've been doing it for sort of 7 years. And I came into the Army Reserve unit on a Wednesday night and I saw a poster on the door. Just as I'm trundling in, thinking about work and thinking about shifting into my sort of reserve persona, on the door is this poster saying, "We need women to go to Antarctica."
Yeah.
And I just thought that had come at exactly the right time for me. This was just the break I was looking for to do a massive challenge, something that very few people have ever done before. I think less than 20 had done it before we went there. And just to really give it a shot and see what I was capable of to push those limits.
Oh, it's incredibly extreme. And I know there was a very rigorous selection process, wasn't there? So how fit were you before you embarked on that?
Certainly before I did the expedition, so averagely, you know, normal. I mean, I've never done a marathon. I can barely swim.
Yeah, there's my normal and there's your normal. So my normal is like, I'm quite chuffed if I've done a 5K.
So was I. And I think we had basic standards, obviously, we need to achieve in the Army. And so before I joined the Army Reserve, I was probably, you know, not particularly fit. I used to play a bit of netball.
Yeah.
And then when I joined the Army Reserve, I thought the one thing I can control is my fitness.
Yes.
And I want to make sure that I'm never the one that's left behind. Mm. So I want to be able to pull my weight. And that's been a really good incentive to stay fit while I've been in the reserves. And through that, I've realised I can do a lot more than I thought, and then started doing trail half marathons, but nothing really more than that. And so when it came to the expedition, I you know, it wasn't selecting, luckily, on fitness, because I didn't think I would have necessarily the right skill set for that.
Okay, so it was quite a daunting prospect.
Yes.
Huge, massive challenge, both physically and mentally, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So you started out in November 2017. Tell us a little bit about what happened along the way and describe the journey.
Oh, yeah, so it was only last year, which seems quite strange. It feels ages ago now. But we landed from Chile into Antarctica, into the base camp.
Mm.
And from there, we had this two-week delay that we just weren't expecting because the weather was so bad.
Right.
So having trained for 2 years, you're so psyched and you've had your last shower and, you know, you say goodbye to all of your family and you're so ready to go.
Gosh.
And then someone says, no, wait. And it wasn't just a couple of days, it was 15 days in the
end. That's quite hard psychologically, I bet.
Really tough. And especially for the team as well, in a bit of a sort of hot environment where, you know, you're all caged up together and everybody's frustrated because you can't get started.
Right.
So that was really tough. And then we set off, and within 24 hours we had a massive storm. We were stuck in our tents for 2 days.
Gosh.
Couldn't go outside, and it was pretty scary actually, because we'd been dropped in all on our own, the only people for thousands of miles, and with the weather nobody could come and rescue us if we needed it. So
really,
it was a
so was
a
there any
shock.
Contact with the outside world?
Yeah, so we were able to do a sat phone call, so satellite phone call through to base camp, and just ask what the weather was, and and they were saying, yeah, it's getting worse, so stay put, don't move.
Mm-hmm.
And then we waited there in our tents for 2 days, and eventually it cleared and we were able to carry on. But that was, you know, day two. So what an introduction to Antarctica.
Absolutely. So then you finally got underway, and describe that.
So then it became a bit more business as usual. Mm. So it got colder. We started to climb up onto the polar plateau, and by that stage we're at 3,000 metres of altitude. So you've got the altitude to deal with, you've got the climb of going up on the gradient, and then also a full sledge. So that was really heavy as well. It weighed more than any of us.
Gosh, yeah, we're up to 80 kilograms, I read. And when you talk about the weather conditions, it went down to minus 40 degrees.
That was minus 56.
Minus 56. I can't even imagine that.
It's three times cold in your freezer, so it's quite a shock to the system. It wasn't always like that, but that was the coldest day, and it meant that if you took your gloves off, literally, you know, your hands were gone straight away, and that was the only day probably where I really was worried I wasn't going to get my hands back, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people who'll be listening to this going, you are bonkers. And I bet there's also a lot of people going, I wonder if I could ever achieve something that extreme. I mean, it must be an incredible feeling to go through it and come out the other end. And I'd also like to ask you about the sort of the camaraderie. So you're there with all these other women who presumably you'd never met before getting together for this challenge.
Yeah.
Was part of the selection process making sure that your personalities gelled, or was that irrelevant? Was it just these are the best people for the job?
The selection process sort of took place over 2 years, and it was Nix's idea was that she wanted to involve as many women from the start as possible. So she didn't want it to be about the final team of six, or else she would have picked a team and trained with them.
Yeah.
But she wanted to give women the skills to go and do the kind of stuff that we're doing to then do future expeditions, which worked really, really well. And it over three expeditions that we did in Norway, we gradually lost people, whether it was through injury or opting out. Again, some people perhaps didn't pick up the skills as much as we needed. And so it did kind of end up with the last six.
Right,
standing.
So it literally was it's like the Hunger Games. Just whittled away.
But yeah.
Unbelievable. Kind of. So in terms of the other women that went through it, part of the team, I'd imagine you're bonded for life now to go through something like that.
Yeah, and I think that was what was so amazing when we finished. And I think when you sort of get to the end and people say, what was the most positive thing about the expedition? And I remember we were all asked in a psychology interview afterwards, and it wasn't for us the South Pole, it wasn't finishing the expedition, it was just that amazing sense of teamwork that we had at the end, and just knowing each other so well, better than anyone you've ever known, and really feeling like just a priceless kind of sense of belonging that I've never had in any other situation.
Well, no other people will have been through that except you guys all together as a team.
Yeah.
And of course, this all came about because you joined the Army Reserves. So if anybody's listening to this thinking, gosh, is that something I could maybe get involved with? What would you say to them? Is it something you think people should consider, or what type of people should consider this?
I think people tend to think about the Army Reserve as, you know, something very boring, and it's all about fighting, and it's really not. I think when you look into the Army, you realise how many other roles there are, and whether it's being a medic or an engineer or, you know, even a chef, the roles are so diverse. And I think that's what makes it so cool, is that you can do one thing for your civilian job and then you can have a completely different skill set in the Army Reserve and learn on the job. Certainly, I'm now self-employed, and I find that if you're self-employed, it's a really awesome way to have regular money coming in that you can rely upon, and it also gives you a chance to set up your own business at the same time.
Yeah, because of course you do get paid.
Yeah.
A salary, and then that can grow as you go along and get more experience.
Yeah.
So that could be something that either supplements a job, I suppose, that somebody's already got, but also I suppose you're going to gain new skills. Possibly not have experiences quite as extreme as yours, but certainly I'd imagine there are other avenues open to adventure and some physical activities that you might not be able to do.
Yeah, definitely. I would definitely say the same opportunities are available to the reserves as the regulars.
Right.
So you get the opportunity to go off. I've actually learnt to ski through the army, so I'd never skied before.
Oh, really?
And now I'm an instructor. So to get to go and do all of that, and then ski racing, and then there's expeditions all of the time. So they're not necessarily to Antarctica, but there's hiking and alpinism in Switzerland and France, and, you know, sailing or scuba diving, it's everything you can do. And not only that, but, you know, if we go on exercise, you can go in helicopters, and I'm completely nuts about helicopters. So that kind of stuff is the sort of activities that when you come back from a weekend and you go back and see your colleagues, and, oh, what did you do this weekend? Well, I just took a helicopter over the Isle of Wight.
Watched some telly. I did this. And, you know, that's one of my questions, actually. I wanted to say, once you've done something like that, is there a big sort of come down? Is it quite difficult to blend back into your normal life?
I think so, yeah. And so I've been really lucky that I'm now full-time with the Army for the moment.
Right.
And we're going around to companies and youth groups, and Sandy, the other reservist, and I are talking about Ice Maiden and about our experiences and about teamwork. And so we've had a chance to kind of live it since we've been back.
Do you think that sort of buzz of doing something that extreme, pushing yourself, that challenge, and that kind of physical and mental endurance, is it addictive? Is it like, okay, I've achieved that now, so that's fine? Or is it, what's next?
Yeah, well, it's definitely one of those things, and you think, oh, that was amazing. This will be enough. This will sort me for life. And then after a while, you're like, yeah, I've parked that. Yeah, we did Antarctica. That was in February, and now I'm like, what are we going to do next? So yeah, we are hatching some plans, and certainly Sandy, my teammate, and I are going to go and climb Mont Blanc in September, as just something you can do in a short space of time rather than the 2 years that we prepared for Antarctica.
Yeah.
And then after that, we've got plans for the team to reunite as many of us as possible and go and do another couple of big events. But
there's a bar called the Ice Bar. Maybe you could go there.
A good reunion spot.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd like to just ask you a couple more questions about the actual trip, just because I find it so fascinating. Mm. Were there any moments where mentally you thought, I can't do this, and you had to rely on the rest of the team to kind of get you through it?
On the expedition itself, no, which is amazing, I think. And I really thought there would be, and I took all sorts of motivational aids to pick me up on a bad day. But we changed our tent buddies 3 times, and each time you got so close to that person that you just, you know, you talked about everything. And so with 6 people on the team, there's always someone that you can turn to pick you up. And if one person doesn't work with them, you can go to someone else, and they might just say the thing or do the little gesture, even if it's a hug or like giving you their last pork scratching.
Yeah. Was there anybody on the team, not sort of naming any names, who sort of found it more difficult than the others, mentally or physically? Or,
well, Sandy got sick. She got sick in the second week, and she had basically flu that she'd picked up in base camp, and had a horrendous time. And and it was exactly the situation that all of us had said would be our worst nightmare. And so being physically ill and not being able to sort of perform and not be able to drag her own weight, which we had to take off her and divide between us, mentally that made things really tough for her. So to come out of that was just an incredible feat of strength.
Amazing.
For her individually, but also a really good chance for us to kind of learn how to motivate each other and how to support each other.
Yeah, there must be so many skills actually that you picked up, the ones that you didn't expect
to
get from the experience. And that said, what would be your main takeaway from the whole experience? Did you have any sort of profound moments where you sort of found anything out about yourself or sort of had any light bulb moments?
Well, weirdly, I think actually just having that headspace, because we skied for 10 hours a day. We couldn't communicate at all between each other while we were out there. And while you're there, it is literally just whiteness everywhere. And the polar plateau, it's completely flat, completely featureless. All you've got is the wind and the sun. Occasionally the clouds change and there's nothing else. So there's no kind of stimulus at all. There's nothing to make you have any thoughts. So you've just got all of this time to fill. And I think having that space away from social media and away from, you know, mobile phones, we told everyone we weren't going to be in contact. We did send a blog for our followers, but pretty much just having that space was the most amazing, liberating feeling. And I felt like the most relaxed I've been, you know, in years.
That's interesting.
Just to be able to think, all I have to do is eat, sleep, ski, repeat.
Just be.
And just be a good support to your team and do your job. And then actually find you're doing that. And you're actually succeeding. And then you feel so good about yourself.
Yeah.
You
know, so a massive brain cleanse, basically.
It felt like there was a big white space that was just filling up. And I was like, God, this is just so relaxing.
Yeah, I guess it's the ultimate mindfulness.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Very interesting.
Good place to try and go back to. Mm. But also really good, I think,
although I'd go back somewhere slightly warmer and do it.
Do it on a beach, probably next time.
So what was the best part of the experience?
I think certainly for me, and probably the rest of the team would agree, was it was that moment when you finish and people say to you, what was the most positive thing? And you just say, actually, it wasn't getting to the South Pole and it wasn't finishing after 2 years of having this massive dream. It was actually just coming together and feeling that sense of belonging and being part of that team, the people that you'd never met before, but you now know them better than, you know, some of your best friends. And certainly that's something I'd never experienced before, and it was something I was really looking for in the army. And I don't think you get any more intense experience of that belonging and that teamwork than we did out in Antarctica.
That's really interesting. Okay, so advice for anybody that is now thinking, I'd like to join the reserves.
Oh, I think it's something that could seem definitely intimidating if you're worried about the physical aspects or, you know, how much commitment you're going to have to give. And certainly from the physical side, there are basic fitness levels that you need to pass, but they will help you get there. So you don't need to worry about having no experience.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you were nearly there, would they actually train you up?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So certainly before I joined the reserves, we had a boot camp, and for probably about 3 months, I would go to that and just practice doing the things that we'd need to pass for the test.
So is that like your HIIT or whatever, like your squats and burpees and press-ups?
Yeah, circuit stuff and
circuit
running
stuff,
and,
yeah,
and press ups and things.
And press ups are hard.
Yeah, and I'm quite lanky, and my teammates think it's the funniest thing ever.
Oh, really?
They'll literally make me do it for a laugh.
Well, there you go. That is of some comfort. So, okay, so people who shouldn't worry too much about that. And I suppose fitness is something you can get up to scratch quite quickly. And I would say that's probably one of the biggest things that really appeals.
Yeah, definitely. And to have that
gaining
support
that
structure
fitness
as well to do it, and people that will train you, and so much support within it, and experts that know about that kind of thing, how to keep yourself fit and how to train for what you're doing. But certainly I think for me the best thing about the whole thing, and I was in the reserves at university as well, is the friendships you get out of it. And so meeting people that are just like you, who get in a horrible situation when it really can't get any worse, they're going to laugh rather than sort of have a strop.
Yes.
And that's a really unique personality type. And I think meeting people like that means that you really do end up with friends for life. So certainly all my friends from university are my army friends.
For people who are thinking they might become an army reservist, what skills might they gain that actually they can maybe transfer into their other job?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so much that you can take from your army training that can actually be applied to normal jobs. And for example, I've always worked for small companies, so I've never really had the chance to lead a team. And as a section commander within the army, I'm leading 8 to 12 guys, often a girl leading guys. And that's a really amazing experience for me to be able to put that on my CV and say I've actually got some leadership and some management experience. So not only leading them sort of in the field, but then also to be managing them to get them to training and get their career path on the road.
Yeah, so I'd imagine that would actually really enhance your confidence.
Yeah,
as well, sort of knowing that you can do that, and then perhaps thinking, oh, I could apply for that because I can already do that.
Yeah, and it's also when you have it on your CV, and sometimes employers will look at it and go, oh, right, okay, brilliant, and they kind of have a perspective on what army leadership's about, and so they it can only be a positive.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah, because again, I think a lot of people might be focused on the physical, but that's leadership, you know, management, as you say, those are just great skills for whatever you want to do. And I guess there's one other question that people might have. They go, so how many weeks do you need to commit to? Because, for instance, if they're not ready to like think about remotely giving up their full-time job, they might only have 4 or 5 weeks holiday. Is that enough time?
Yeah, definitely. So we do normally train for one weekend a month, Wednesday evening, so one evening after work. And then also a two-week annual camp every year. So
So it's something you can fit in around a regular job
definitely
fairly easily.
Yeah.
And you'd get paid for that time as well.
Yeah. And it can be, I think the minimum number of days you need to do is 19 days, and then you can actually do almost as many as you like. So the scope to do as little or as much as you want is fantastic. And I've certainly found that I just don't have enough days of holiday to do all the things that I want to do with the reserves, because there are so many opportunities.
Okay, and then there's also something called the Armed Forces Covenant, isn't there, which means some employers can be more flexible to help people dedicate time to the army as an initiative.
Yeah, and so it really depends. I think thousands of companies have now signed up to the Armed Forces Covenant to say that they will support reservists in their employ. I've certainly found that I've worked for small companies and they don't know anything about the Covenant.
Yeah.
But when I've spoken to them, they've been happy to create an Armed Forces Reserves policy.
Right.
And so I've ended up...
Oh, that's very proactive.
Really good.
Yeah.
And actually very supportive and good to have them on side. So then I get normally 5 days of extra annual leave, either paid or half pay. And then I would take 5 days of my normal annual leave allowance to do the training that I needed to complete.
Fantastic. So again, if businesses are listening and they're thinking, well, that sounds like a great thing for my employees, if you want to find out anything about it, do look it up on www.armedforcescovenant.gov.uk, and perhaps you too could end up having some people coming into work on a Monday, and when everyone's sitting around or maybe getting their cup of tea, going, what did you do at the weekend then? Oh, I did a bit of shopping. I went to see a film. I climbed a mountain, jumped out of a helicopter. Very little bit more interesting. And I think more and more now people are realising that just having these wonderful experiences is accessible.
Yeah.
You know, I guess you do see other people doing them. People are much more into fitness, I think, than when I was growing up, and all these amazing challenges. So it's very inspiring.
Well, it's great to have the opportunity to do it, because, you know, where else would I have ever had the chance to go to Antarctica? And I know that's not a normal army activity, but all of the stuff I've done has been, you know, opportunities that I couldn't
and
necessarily
have found
myself.
And with their support, so I guess you've got that. You said earlier on to me that you had a nutritionist.
Yeah.
So somebody who helped you pile on the pounds. Yes. Sophie was saying she needed to have a layer of blubber before going because you were burning how many calories a day?
10,000 calories a day.
And,
yeah.
And ingesting?
About 5,000.
Yeah. So therefore there had to be some fat to burn off.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm ready.
Sign me up.
I've got that layer already. But yeah, but I mean, on a serious note, to have that proper advice, professional advice.
And that was actually a reservist who was our nutritionist.
Ah,
so
okay.
She was a member of the team right until the very last minute. She was the seventh person. Mm. And she did all of the training with us and then said, I'm done. I've reached my limit. I don't think I can go to Antarctica, but I'm going to carry on doing your nutrition. She also did all of our social media while we were away. So what an amazing team player to say, I've done all of this, but I'm not going to go, but I'm still going to support you
Fantastic.
In every way I can.
So. Well, you obviously meet incredible people. It sounds like you have to be intrepid, up for a challenge, and open-minded and daring.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, to join the reserves, you've just got to be willing to push yourself. And I think that's the only thing you need to do, is just to say that I'm willing to give it a go and to sign up for something and see how far you can go. Because probably we all underestimate what we're capable of.
Yeah,
I certainly do.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And just to take yourself out of your comfort zone and maybe just pep things up a little bit. If your own job Monday to Friday is getting a little bit boring. This would certainly be a way to inject a little bit of excitement into life. Well, Sophie, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking to me today. And good luck. What is it you're doing next weekend? Climbing Mont Blanc? Oh, no, your marathon next weekend, isn't it?
Running a marathon in the Pyrenees.
Okay.
Whole new experience.
Well, good luck with all of that.
Thank you.
So joining me now is none other than Countryfile and Escape to the Country presenter, Jules Hudson. So welcome, Jules.
Hello, Gemma. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. And I'm just quite fascinated by how many things you've done in your life. Studied archaeology, then went to Sandhurst for your military training, and you're a presenter, a very well-known one. How do you pack it all in?
It's a very good question. It's a very good question.
Maybe it's the army training.
Well, there is a sense of the organisational skills that the army gives you, which I certainly found very useful in my early career in TV, having come sort of hot from Sandhurst. But yeah, I mean, for various reasons, I've decided to do it all again. And here we are back in the army.
So let's go back to the beginning then. How did you first get involved with the army?
Well, I grew up in an army town in Colchester, and I think my parents' generation were very much a wartime generation. So around the dinner table, the conversation would often come down to the war. As a family, we were very much imbued with the story of the Second World War and the fate of various family members, you know, during that incredible time. And I think I'd always had a military connection, although neither of my parents were in the army. My grandfather fought with great distinction during the Second World War. And I think, you know, growing up in an army town, being a boy, you know, I just was always fascinated by the army. And of course, Colchester is a big army town. Every year it had a big military tattoo, which I think probably became a fantastic recruiting tool to many people who lived in that area.
Sure, I can imagine, actually, all the kind of ceremony and, as you say, being a young boy looking at all of that might have been very interesting. So now most people, not everybody, but a lot of people listening to this will know you from the television. But as you say, you kind of gone back to the army. So explain that.
Well, when I joined the army first time round, I went to Sandhurst back in 1993. And the regiment I was going to join, the 3rd Royal Tank Regiment, known as the Armoured Farmers, used to recruit from Somerset, was my regiment of choice. But sadly, in the early 90s, post Gulf War I, there was a big strategic defence review called Options for Change. And, well, it changed quite a lot for me because the 3rd Royal Tank Regiment had been struck from the list and had ceased to exist. So by the time I actually got to Sandhurst and walked through the gates, I was kind of homeless in terms of the regiment I was ever likely to join, but I was still very keen on, you know, joining the Armoured Corps, and very kindly, Royal Scots Dragoon Guards offered me a job. But I think at that time, you know, I was 23, you know, you thought life stretched before you in all manner of directions, and the prospects during my 3-year commission, which is what I was signed up for, were looking, if I'm honest, a bit limited. I was going to spend a couple of years in Katrick and a year in Germany, and that would have been me done. And I just thought, maybe this isn't all that. So I took a very difficult decision to leave Sandhurst before I commissioned. And I guess it was an itch that was always there to be scratched.
And it is interesting, isn't it, how careers, you know, when you're 23, you think you've going to have this path. And then as you get older, you realise it's more of a sort of career tree and that you branch off, but you can always come back.
I think I've always been fascinated by those lives which have I suppose, demonstrated the variation that you can find in what we would now describe, I guess, as a portfolio career. So yes. You do lots of different things where they're appropriate and if you think you can bring something to the table. But I never would have imagined in a million years that I'd ever find myself back in the army or indeed back at Sandhurst and commissioning. It was always a part of my past. But last year it became very much a part of my future, which was really interesting.
So with regard to anybody who's interested in becoming an armed forces reserve, what are the sort of required time commitments? What else can people fit in around that?
Well, I think you have to be very clear with your family, first and foremost. I mean, you are going to have to give up quite a few weekends, quite a few evenings. And I think it's really difficult if your family aren't supportive of what you're doing, or indeed your employer. I'm fortunate in the sense that I'm self-employed, so I can kind of map out my working year to some extent. But I certainly need the support of my family, and certainly without their encouragement and help in, you know, coping with the fact that I wasn't at home for a couple of months last year while I went back to Sandhurst and all that sort of stuff, you know, you can't really do it. And I think it's really important to make sure before you even start that all those things are lined up and are on board. In terms of the annual commitment, depending on the regiment you're in, it's either 29 or 19 days a year. I'm now in a regiment which, in a brigade, which requires 19 days of my time a year. So it's a little bit less, which does make it a little bit easier. But I think, you know, the point about being a reservist is that actually it's not about necessarily just doing the minimum. You're there really to try and get involved and do as much as you possibly can.
OK, so obviously you had an idea of what it's like to be in the army before. Well, you know, a strong idea. So what skills would you say that people need if they don't have any previous experience?
It's a very good question. I mean, for one, don't think the army are looking for warriors. You know, they're not expecting you to walk through the gates and be able to kind of take on a machine gun nest, you know, there and then.
Yeah.
It's very much a kind of iterative process of training. The key thing is that you've got the will to want to be there, that you're physically fit, that mentally you're up for the stresses and strains of working all hours without a lot of sleep. But of course, you're training with your fellow reservists. And I think that shared fellowship is the thing that really gets you through. And the army will remind you quite rightly throughout your training that you will only do it if you work together. And I think that sense of teamwork is really, really crucial. You've got to be a team player.
That's something that seems to be coming through very, very strongly, is that it can give you a real sense of belonging and that sense of team. So if people were lacking that in their other life, it could be a really wonderful thing.
Well, I mean, I'm always struck by, well, two things really. Personally, I've always been very lucky in that I've done jobs I've wanted to do and I've worked in the company of men and women who want to be there as well. It's a very positive working environment. If you worked in a factory or an office where that wasn't the case, I think the army would certainly fill that gap for you because, you know, we always take it for granted, perhaps, that people want to do what they're doing because I work in a very interesting, you know, and lively environment. Mm-hmm. But for those people who don't have that opportunity, I think the army can certainly fill that void. And I think it also helps you bring back to that workplace a sense of teamwork and leadership and good management skills, which you can, I hope, then infuse into your workplace. And I certainly think for many employers, it's a great bonus having reservists scattered through their workforce because they bring those army values, you know, back to the table.
Well, this is interesting again and something I think I hadn't quite considered before hosting this chat, and that was management skills, because of course I immediately think about the physical and probably the mental strength of you know, certain things that you're required to do in the army. But I think that's really useful, that managing a team that you could take into a corporate job, for instance, and could be brilliant for an employer.
Well, I think one of the things that has dogged British industry across the board for many decades now is a lack of dedicated leadership and management training. People often find themselves at the top of the tree by default. You know, they've been there
long enough.
Yeah, absolutely. It's your turn. And I think, you know, we're not very good, actually, at dealing with management training in a positive way. It's had a lot of bad press over many years. You know, ludicrous kind of schemes that people are charged to do. You know, can you herd ducks? Can you build a house of cards? Can you do all this sort of stuff? I mean, the bottom line is, can you communicate and lead people in difficult situations? You know, can you get people to do what they have to do, perhaps when they don't want to do it? And I think that kind of is what it's all about. So you will not find, I don't think, a better suite of skills available in the way that the army trains you and what it expects of you. And I think I speak for everybody, certainly on my course, you know, you learn an awful lot about yourself, regardless of where you are in time of life or civilian position. You realise that in terms of management and leadership, there is always more to learn, and you can bring that back to the table.
It's interesting. I wonder if those sort of good interpersonal communication skills are due to the fact that within the army there'd be a lot of face-to-face communication, and that perhaps some managers in various corporate fields these days hide behind email a lot. And then there's that sort of worry about almost being unpopular, which actually as a manager shouldn't be a concern.
Well, it's very interesting now. I mean, I used to work for a management training company years ago, and I think one of the issues we found is that senior managers are always quite reluctant to go on a management training course because it might highlight what they didn't know, potentially in front of their peers. But of course, that's usually a byproduct of the fact that they probably never had any formal management training in the first place to get to where they've got. Yeah. But there's no doubt the army is, of course, a brilliant sort of interpersonal forum if you need to develop those skills. And the way that the army selects candidates to go forward, in my case for officer training, and also, you know, just to be a regular soldier, you know, it's looking for people who can get on with other people, who can communicate ideas, who can make sense of quite difficult situations, boil them down into their kind of very simple components, and then develop what might be quite a complicated plan on the back of it. But I think it's that sense of planning, teamwork and leadership that you need to put that plan into effect, which is where the army really does score. And it does it, you know, to a prescribed format. It's tried, it's tested beyond belief in some very difficult circumstances around the world, as we will now recognise. And I think, you know, if you're able to get in and able to enjoy the training that that gives you, it will absolutely help your civilian career.
Very interesting. Right, so what kind of activities have you personally got involved in with the army?
Well, most of my time thus far has been spent retraining to get my commission. As far as Sandhurst is concerned, you're right, it is all about teamwork, it's all about leadership. There is a large physical component to it. Most basic training as far as soldiers and officers are concerned revolves around the infantry model. So the army takes the view that if it trains everybody as an infantry soldier first, when they move on to their special skill to arms training, whether they're going to be a signaller, an engineer, a helicopter pilot, you know, helicopter engineer, a tank commander, you name it. But the bottom line is, if you have to pick up a rifle and fight, you can do that. It also, of course, you know, the infantry model is the basis upon which the army's structure is founded in terms of the way platoons operate and sections operate and so on. Different units might give them different names, but fundamentally it's about how do you control different sized bodies of men and women in the field taking on pretty complex problems. So, yeah, from my point of view, you know, it certainly took me to parts of my sort of panic dial that I hadn't visited for many, many years. But, you know, you get through it. And I think there's a fundamental sea change now from what I saw 25 years ago to the way the army trains people now. And that is that in those days, it was very much a case of select out. You know, we've selected you in.
Right.
We think you've got what it takes. Now it's up to you to prove that you can keep giving us what we think it takes.
Right.
Until we either make you or we break you. Ooh. It was a pretty negative way of doing it. Now the onus is very much on select in, training.
Yeah,
you know, and I think, for me, that's a really, really positive change in the way that the army
Much more supportive.
Absolutely. You know, you're there. You know, you're prepared to do it. Let's not select you out. Let's train you in. And I think when you realise that the staff around you, who are absolutely brilliant and second to none, have that mindset, it's a great comfort. And it allows you to make mistakes and to learn from those mistakes.
Yeah.
And
to
be encouraged.
Admit that you're
struggling
with something and you need some tools to improve.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, again, you take that mindset into civilian life, it's a good place to be.
Sure, absolutely. So critical thinking, physical strength, there's a lot of sort of different characteristics that would be very beneficial for someone thinking of joining the reserves.
Absolutely. I mean, I mean, don't think it's all about, you know, having to run a marathon in 10 minutes. I mean, there's an awful lot more to it than that. And certainly the mental aptitude that you need and the way that you're tested mentally when you are absolutely knackered and you're thinking, I cannot go on another step.
I've had training in that because I've got two kids.
Well, as I, you know, when I went back, you know, I was the old man of my platoon. But certainly having a young child now compared to
you're
some
like
of the
sleep deprivation, that's fine. Totally
yeah, absolutely.
Used to it.
Yeah, I was totally all over that. You know, so that was all good fun.
Actually, but, in terms of your fitness levels as well, do you find that they are affected when you're off doing your country farm? And I know what it's like working in TV. Is it like bacon sandwiches in the morning and it all goes to pot? Or do you manage
hard
to keep the fitness up?
Well, I, funnily enough, I find it easier to go running and that sort of thing in the mornings when I'm away filming, because I haven't got the distraction of family and children and all that sort of thing.
Okay,
so actually, when I go away, actually, it's a good time to keep up with it.
Yeah.
But you do need to keep it up. But it's been a good thing. I mean, at my time of life, I'm 48 now. You know, I never thought I'd go back to being as fit as I now am. I was probably fitter when I left Sandhurst back in August. It may have slipped a little bit, but you get into the habit of trying to run.
You know what, there's nothing negative, is there, about needing to keep fit?
No, absolutely.
Whatsoever.
Absolutely.
There's like there's all the benefits and none of the negatives.
No, I couldn't agree more. You know, and certainly I've found that at home, you know, and just your general overall mental agility,
yeah.
You know, it really, really does help. And as you will know, you know, film days are long days. You know, it's only over when it's finished.
Yeah,
you know, having that
exhausting.
Resilience is good.
Yeah. Is there any reason someone wouldn't be accepted as a reservist?
Well, sadly, there are some occasions when either through medical issues, could be, you know, just straightforward physical issues, they're not quite ready yet, you know, physically to pass some of the tests that are required. It could be an intellectual issue with some of the tests and so on and so forth. But as I say, I would reassure anybody, you know, the Army is very keen to recruit people and it recognises that not everybody is going to turn up as the born perfect warrior. And in fact, that's not really what they're looking for. They're looking for something different. They're looking for commitment. They're looking for that spark that's going to keep somebody in the Army and motivate them to keep on working through the Army within a huge range of specialisations. You know, whatever your interests are, whether it's at the sharp end as an infantry soldier or, you know, more in the kind of logistical support side of life, you know, there is a job there for absolutely everybody, man, woman. And age is an interesting one. I mean, I would have thought I was too old, but actually the Army took the view, you know what, you've been around the block a bit. That's quite useful to us.
Experience, yeah.
Absolutely. You've got some experience. And certainly as far as I'm concerned now, obviously I've got a strong media background. I'm now working more in a kind of media area of the Army, albeit I, you know, technically commissioned as a Royal Engineer. I've now moved into a new brigade, which is very much focused on the kind of media ops side of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really sensible deployment, because actually the Army's saying, well, look, we wouldn't train you to do all that stuff. We don't have those sorts of skills, but you're bringing those skills to us.
Yeah.
And I think when you look around a normal kind of reserve cohort, I look at the people I trained with at Sandhurst over 2 months, a fantastic range of really interesting individuals, men and women who were really committed to being there, who had a phenomenal range of jobs in Civvy Street. But of course, you know, you go into the Army and it's a great leveller and you're all having to kind of figure out how to get back into it and how to be soldiers, you know,
yeah,
first and foremost.
Yeah. Well, also everything that you've talked about, it does make me think they probably need quite a wide range of different sorts of people to make up that team. So you need your engineers, you need your sort of planners, your mathematicians, your physical stars. You need a little bit of everything in that one team. So if people have got certain strengths, they'd sort of bring that to the forefront and make the most of it.
Absolutely. And don't forget, of course, the Army will develop others that you perhaps didn't realise that you had. And it will open doors into areas of inquiry where you thought, actually, you know, I never really thought I'd be an engineer. But guess what? Now I'm a Royal Engineer. And all that goes with that, from building bridges, trenches, blowing things up, all that sort of stuff, you know, it's a really interesting way of doing it. So you may think, actually, you know, my expertise is in IT, but I don't really want to spend my life doing IT.
Yeah.
I wish I did something more physical. Well, then for you, the Army probably is a really good place to go, because maybe you join the infantry. You know, and I think, you know, it offers you a chance to do something that may be very different to your civilian job. So don't think what you do in Civvy Street has got to be applied to what you do in the Army. You could absolutely opt for something completely different, which might be a refreshing change from what might otherwise become something of a busman's holiday.
So interesting. Well, listen, Jules, thank you so much for giving us this huge insight and overview. But before you go, I would like to ask you just, you know, what's one piece of advice to somebody who was thinking of joining the reserves? What would it be?
If you've got the slightest inkling that it could be for you, pick up the phone, get on a website, talk to anyone you know who might be in the Army and ask the question, could I be of use to you? And I think you'll find you'll get a pretty positive response. It's a long pipeline to go through. You know, it's a pretty rigorous process, the recruitment process. But if you're lucky enough to come out the other side of it and find yourself in the Army in whatever capacity, I don't think you'll regret it.
Well, it's like I always say to my kids, anything that's worth having in life, it's always hard work, isn't it?
And regardless of age, you know, actually, I never would have thought that at my age I would get back in. But it just goes to prove that it's never over. You know, you can keep going.
Yeah, and I'm glad that experience is valued. That's exactly as it should be. So, OK, so in a nutshell, then, your advice is if you want to be a reservist, don't be reserved. Get out there and ask.
Exactly. Ask the question. You never know.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Jules, for joining us.
Now, my third guest today is explorer extraordinaire Leveson Wood. Leveson, thank you for joining me for a chat today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Right, we're talking today to celebrate Armed Forces Reserves Day. And I know that as well as being a famous explorer, you're actually an Army Reservist too. So it would be quite useful if the first thing we could talk about is what the Army Reserve actually is.
Yeah, of course, sure. Well, you know, the Army Reserve has a couple of defined roles. I mean, firstly, it provides very highly trained soldiers who can work alongside their regular counterparts on missions both in the UK and also overseas. Secondly, it gives people who've got specialist skills like medics, engineers, a range of exciting opportunities to use them in new ways.
So that's interesting in itself, because I know that you were in the Army for some years, weren't you?
Yes, I was in the regular army. I was in the parachute regiment for 5 years, but since then I've been in the reserves for the last 6 or 7 years.
So do you think that people who would be maybe interested in becoming a reserve, you know, is it necessary to have been in the army before, or, you know, can this be for anybody?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, it is a popular way of continuing your military career for those guys that have left the regulars but want to keep up on a part-time basis. But also, it's open to people with no military experience at all, as long as you're over the age of 18 and up to the age of 48 or 50, depending on which units you're about going to join, with no military experience. So it's a great way of learning new skills, meeting new people, and getting paid for it as well.
Yeah, no, completely. And so what was it that you were missing that made you go back, if you like?
Well, for me, I had a great time in the regular army, but I wanted a new challenge. And so I pursued my civilian career. And but at the same time, you know, actually, the commitment I thought was certainly doable alongside my day to day job. And also the skills that I was learning both in the, you know, both in my civilian career and in the reserves meant that they were both complementing each other. So I was doing a lot of travel, obviously, myself in my civvy career.
Yes. But
the reserves also gave me the opportunity to travel and do different things. So I've managed to travel all around the world with the reserves and learn new skills as well. So for me, it was getting the best of both worlds.
Perfect. So you've explained that you need to be 18 and you can apply to join the army until the day before your 50th birthday. That's correct, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. But also, what criteria, what characteristics do you think you need to be in the Army Reserve to be a reservist?
Well, I think, you know, the characteristics, it really depends on which part of the Army Reserve you'd like to join. But I think we're, you know, the Army Reserve is looking for people that want to commit to anywhere between 19 or 27 days a year as a minimum, which actually isn't a great deal. But we're looking for people who are enthusiastic, who want to learn new skills and who believe they've got skills and the life experience to offer and to basically give back a bit into the community. But really, it's, you know, if you're looking to meet new people, make new friends, lifelong friends, and do something just a bit different and something interesting as well.
I think that sort of team spirit and camaraderie is something that comes up a lot, as is the physical aspect, that fitness that you have to be very physically fit in order to be in the army. But the thing is, people who are aware of you know that you've walked along the Nile and walked along the Himalayas. For some people, that might be a bit overwhelming. You know, realistically, what levels of fitness should people be aiming for if they want to apply?
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't need to, you certainly don't need to go and walk the length of Africa or Asia to be in the Army Reserves.
Yeah.
You know, there are basic fitness tests, which basically the Army will train you to get to. So when you join the Army Reserves, you can go and do, you know, basic training, which will get you to the right level of physical fitness. So you don't need to be a Superman or Superwoman to do this. You just need to be prepared to, you know, put the effort in and get fit yourself. But as long as you've got a basic level of fitness and no existing major medical conditions, then, you know, it's open to the vast majority of people.
Okay, now there's another small thing, tattoos. I believe that you can join the army with tattoos as long as they're not above your collar. So that seems fair enough, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So all of those people who've been young and gone to Thailand or whatever and done that when they're 19, that's fine. It just has to be not above your collar and not offensive as well.
Yeah, that's right. The army's got no problem with tattoos. A lot of soldiers have tattoos.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, offensive above the collar. You're talking about tattooing your head. It's quite extreme. Now, why would you say that people considering joining the Army Reserve should really go for it?
Well, I think, you know, for me, certainly, it was the opportunity to travel, to train in places as far afield as Kenya, California. I've been all over Africa with the Army Reserve.
Gosh.
Been to the Philippines. I even went to Burma a couple of years ago.
Fascinating,
so,
yeah.
Great, fascinating places. To learn new skills, you know, you can earn military and civilian qualifications as part of your commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you get paid. Mm-hmm. You actually get paid for all of your training and reserve duties that you complete. And there are lots of other benefits. You know, you can receive both financial incentives and the opportunity to earn a tax-free bonus every year. But I think for me, you know, really as well, it's the opportunity to meet new people and gain that great sense of belonging.
Yes. And in terms of the best Army experiences you've had, I mean, it sounds like you've had so many. Is there one in particular that you would go, I will never forget that?
I think one of the amazing things, I went to Burma 2 years ago and we did the most amazing battlefield study. My grandfather actually served in Burma in the Second World War.
Right,
so it was a great way of actually going back to follow in his footsteps and learn more about that campaign. So there really is something for everyone.
Mm-hmm. What do you think your experiences with the Army have taught you?
I think the main thing really is both teamwork and leadership. It's operating as part of a team and demonstrating those skills and putting them to good use as well.
I'd imagine it's a place where there's no room for ego.
Yeah, I think
all in it together.
Definitely. When you're working to achieve a mission, whether that's, you know, either on operations or something in the UK, I think really, you know, you learn to, you know, bring your skills and your character and just really work together as part of a team.
Now, I know that you've just been away doing a bit of rafting. But what is next for you, Leveson? I know you've been all over the world. Is there anywhere you haven't been yet or explored?
Well, the world's a big place. There's still lots of places I'd like to go to. This year, I've just got back from 5 months in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. I've just been doing another expedition. So there'll be a new book out later on in the year and a new TV series.
Fantastic.
In terms of what's next, I'm doing a speaking tour around the UK in the autumn.
Wonderful. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining me today, Leveson. It was fantastic to catch up. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
So there you go. 3 very different experiences, but I'm sure you'll agree, all as exciting as each other. I hope you found our podcast interesting and thought-provoking. And if you're interested in getting more information about the Army Reserves or are thinking of joining, please visit all the W's, www.army.mod.uk, or just search Army Reserves. Thanks so much for listening.